This week is Parshas Behar B'chukosai. Our Parsha, these two Parshiot really bring us to the conclusion of the book of Vayikra. And Bezat Shem will do a quick overview of the Parsha, and then we'll try to review it with a little bit more depth. So Parshas Behar, Hashem tells us when we come to the land of Israel, we have to have Shemitah. we count 6 years, and on the seventh year we let the field go fallow. We leave it open. Whoever wants can come eat from it. And then we're told that after seven cycles of Shemitah, we have Yovel. Yovel literally is a ram's horn, and we blow the ram's horn on Yom Kippur.
But it also means to set off, to release. What was that Rabbi Lisman was saying? That it has implications of the freeing the...
When we blow the ram's horn on Yom Kippur, all the slaves go free and all the lands come back to their original owner. And then we have on that 50th year of Yovel, everyone rests together, just like Shemitah. You have the 49th year and then the 50th year. Year after year, everyone rests and the land goes back to its original owner. Hashem says, "You keep the Shemitah, and I'll give you blessing. You'll have so much blessing that you'll have enough food in the sixth year to last you the sixth year, the seventh year, and the eighth year until finally you have the crops of the eighth year." We're in the eighth year right now. Right, this is the year after Shemitah. This year, last year was Shemitah. Then we have the mitzvah that if someone has to sell their portion, they have to sell their part in the land of Israel. So there's a special mitzvah to sell first to relatives, and that relatives should purchase it. We have the mitzvahs of the different cities that you can redeem the house you sell in the city, right? The house comes back on Yovel. You guys know what I'm talking about, or
yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Okay. And the walled cities, yeah? You guys learned all this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to move forward. And
wait, I'm sorry, what was the walled part?
The walled cities, after a year, they go over and they belong to the other person for eternity. Mm-hmm. Meaning they don't go out on Yovel, the walled cities. The cities that were walled from time Yeshua bin Nun, they're called Batei Arei Choma. Whatever you sell in a walled city, that goes over and remains. You have a year to redeem it, and if you don't redeem it within that year, it's over. We have a special mitzvah to help someone before he collapses. And if someone, you see his business is about to fail, he needs a loan and that'll save him, that'll tide him over, we have a special mitzvah to help him out. And here we have the mitzvah not to take interest. You let him have it with an interest-free loan. We have the mitzvah if someone is so impoverished that he sells himself as a slave, so we have a mitzvah to treat him well. We're not allowed to treat him like a slave.
And you can't make him do things that he wasn't trained to do.
So you're not allowed to give him avodas parech. What's parech? Parech is either pointless labor, that you tell him, take each twig and break it into five pieces. You don't need that. It's pointless. Or else it's endless labor. You tell him, you stand here and you keep digging till I tell you to stop. I'll come back at some point and tell you to stop. Those are two things that are called avodas parech. That's called backbreaking labor. The idea is the concept behind it. Pointless labor or labor that's endless.
But you can give a Gentile this kind of labor? If you come into possession of him as an indentured servant?
Doesn't say anywhere, right?
Doesn't say anywhere. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is from the aspect of Amta Re'acha Kamocha. I don't know, because don't forget, when you take a non-Jew, when you take him as a slave, you give him 12 months to decide whether he wants to convert to Judaism or not. If he chooses to convert, then he becomes Eved Knani, a non-Jewish slave, which really, he's gotten a circumcision, he's gone to the mikveh for the sake of slavery, and now he's obligated in mitzvahs like a woman. So when we say a non-Jewish slave, we mean a slave who began as a non-Jew. If he wants to continue in a Jewish home, he has to accept all mitzvot that women do.
So if you just have a laborer,
a hired worker, you could ask him to do whatever he wants. You're paying him for his time.
I have a question from a couple minutes ago, though.
Yeah.
When are we going to start doing the give back the land thing?
So that's when the people of Israel come back to the land of Israel, and each tribe is settled in their section of the land. Now, the Torah tells us that if a Jew has to sell himself to a non-Jew, there's a special mitzvah to redeem him. There's an opinion in the Talmud that when you redeem him, he becomes your slave. And the idea is, let's say you have a bum for a nephew. He gambles his life away. So then he's in debt, so he sells himself to slavery. He doesn't sell himself to a Jew, he sells himself to a non-Jew. Now he knows when he sells himself to a non-Jew that he won't be able to keep Shabbat. There's no reason that non-Jew should respect his religion. He won't be able to keep all the Yamin to him. He won't be able to keep most of the mitzvot. So what's he doing? But rather what? He wants to make the extra buck and he's doing it. What's going to happen if you redeem him? You're going to pay off the guy. He'll do it again a few months later. So that's why there's an opinion that says you don't have to redeem him to freedom. You redeemed him, now he has to work for you all that time. Whatever time he sold himself, he'll work for you, but he'll lead a Jewish life. Because the Torah didn't want you wasting your money. When the Torah told you to redeem a relative, it was because we assume things must have been so tough that he sold himself even to a non-Jew into slavery. Must be it was really, really tough. Help him out. You're his relative. But you don't have to be stupid, Torah says. So he'll work for you during that time. You paid for those years, so now he'll work for you. The end of the parasha, the Torah says, "Ki livnei Israel avadim." The Jews are my slaves; they're my servants, and that's why we say, if you hire a person for a day's work, so technically he has to work for you, whatever you want him to do that day. That's what you hired him for: to paint, clean the lawn, to whatever it is. You tell him, "I'm hiring you for today. Whatever help I need, you'll help me." He starts working, and it becomes a really hot day. It's humid, and he sees that you want him to carry bricks, and it's really hard work. After he's worked 4 hours, he wants to quit. You say, wait a second, I counted on you for today. We agreed. A deal's a deal. The halacha is, even in the middle of the day, he could turn around and say, I don't want to continue. You won't have to pay him, but he doesn't have to continue. Because the pasuk says, Ki livnei Israel avadim. God says, they're my slaves. Even when a guy gets paid and he says, I'll work for you all day, he's still not your slave. You don't own him. Yeah, if he chooses, at every minute he could turn back. That's a special halacha we learn from this pasuk. Then we have the mitzvah. Torah tells us don't make any idols. And don't make a mosaic floor that's used for bowing down. In the temple, they had mosaic floors that they bowed down. In our shuls and around the rest of Israel, you're not allowed to make a mosaic floor to bow on. And that's talking about bowing completely down. That's why on Yom Kippur, where we bow, and some people do bow completely down, we put a napkin or something, because if you're going to bow completely down, maybe there's a mosaic floor over there, etc.
Mosaic or just...
Well, that's a good question. It's a good question. Different opinions on that one.
Mosaic floors in by Sheni?
I don't know.
By Rishon we're talking about?
Or
in just other...
The commentary say there were mosaic floors. Which bite they're talking about, I don't know. Okay, that brings us to Bechukosa, yeah.
So then catch the answer to the giving back land.
When the people of Israel, the majority, come back, and each tribe knows where it's supposed to be.
How are we going
to
do that?
It's a good question.
That's only in Mashiach.
Maybe. Right? I don't know. Maybe we'll have a prophet without Mashiach. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a way of figuring it out without Mashiach. I don't know.
I don't think prophecy is coming back until Mashiach, right?
Are you a prophet to say that?
Well, no,
I think it is, actually.
The prophets of the Great Assembly declared prophecy over at the Great Assembly, right?
Yeah, I understand, but I think that there actually will... I think it's one of the...
It says it ended in the area of Tzfat. It will come back in the area of Tzfat.
But it is going to come back before Mashiach.
I don't know. There are different sources. I don't know that stuff.
A couple months ago,
I don't know.
That's one opinion.
Okay,